Hi everyone, this is Amitabh. Welcome to another episode of Man Walks Into the Rabbit Hole. Today's rabbit hole is about the man in our heads. And I'll explain what that means, and I'll also explain why it's a rabbit hole for me. But before I get there, I was reminded of this in a very strange way, right? It's not like all my rabbit holes are perennially in my foreground all the time. So, I was looking for a particular book by a favorite author of mine. And this favorite author, one of the favorite authors, but probably easily in the top three, is top three of my entire life, is an author called Pico Iyer. And for folks who haven't read him, you should absolutely do that. He's for most parts a travel writer, but writes with a wisdom which is rare, right? Which is very rare. He could easily pass off as a new age guru if he wanted to. He's there on Twitter, or at least there's a Stan account in his name, but do check out the posts on Twitter as well. They are mind-blowingly awesome. Unwind the stack. So I'm searching for a book by Pico Iyer, and I'm trying to find a Kindle edition. And the name of the book is The Man Within My Head. Right? And this book, if I'm not mistaken, like I haven't read it yet, but this book is about Graham Greene's work. And Pico Iyer, I believe when he started writing, so I think he was an investment banker at one of the Wall Street firms, and he eventually took to his calling, which is writing, and he moved from New York to Kyoto, and which is where I believe he is even today. So when he started writing, or somewhere around that process, he obsessively, or at least compulsively, fell in love with Graham Greene and his work. And in an attempt to understand the motivations and the inner journey of Graham Greene as an author, Pico Iyer took a research-oriented approach, and that essentially is a book called The Man Within My Head. And then I won't say meanders, but my sense is it also eventually juxtapositions his own life, which means Pico Iyer's own life, against the context of Graham Greene's work. I haven't read the book, but this is my broad understanding, and I wanted to read it, one, because I like Pico Iyer, and second, because the theme of the book was very interesting. Now, as I was searching for it, I struggled to find the right Kindle edition. There are a few issues there, but that's a separate conversation. I remembered something which struck me, right? Something which immediately came back to my foreground. So I must have been 11 or 12, maybe 13, but definitely 11, 12 or 13, not older and not younger as well, I think. And I used to live in a very small, lower middle class locality within the suburban part, which means the outer precincts of Bombay. And I used to live in a house which was fairly nice. I mean, for what we could afford, it was a nice house. Small but beautiful house. Very small but very nice. And it was a nice, lovely house, and it had a small parking/play area, and we kids, and we were not too many kids. So this building/apartment complex had only 16 flats, of which 16 flats in about 9 or 10 families, because some houses were owned by the same family. So we used to play downstairs. Like all of us growing up, I don't think this is anything special. I've had my share of fights. I've had my share of disagreements. I've had my share of social ostracization, being ostracized from the social network, which means my children network or childhood network. I've also been probably borderline bullied, right? But again, all beside the point. So in one of these circumstances, and I clearly remember the person who I was arguing with, his face, he was I believe about 2 or 3 years older to me, but well built, stocky, and full of the raw energy which I lacked then and I probably lack even now. Like, I cannot probably roll up my sleeves and get down to literally beating the shit out of any other person. I am not that sort of a person. I read a lot of Bukowski, Charles Bukowski. I read a lot, or Bukowski, I'm confused, but whatever. I read a lot of Bukowski and I see like a lot of his poems normalize violence. And not because I think he's trying to normalize violence. He's just stating his life. His life is a blue collar life and he has lived through his life. So coming back to my story of growing up. So I remember the scene on a particular day where I am arguing with somebody and this guy begins to get slightly violent, as in he actually starts beating me up. And I've never been the one who can retaliate, especially physically, right? Even verbally, I'm not great at retaliation unless I know the other person well. Like, I can't get into a screaming match with a stranger. Like, hence, I'm probably very unsuited to living in India broadly. And what struck me on that particular day, and that is the memory which came back with this Pequoyer book, is as the guy was hitting me, I think he probably hit me twice or thrice on my neck, on my face, on my head. He had 3 brothers, so he started screaming for his brothers to join him so that they could kind of gang up on me and beat me up a little bit. And this, if I'm not mistaken, was some simple argument about cricket or about the ball hitting him or something like that, right? Some crazy little small shit argument. And as I was participating in this and as I was getting beaten up or bullied, whatever is the right word for it, I remember completely getting disassociated from the scene. And this is the first time it was really happening to me, right? Almost like an out-of-body experience. But you are now beginning to see yourself and the other person as if you're watching a movie. So I am seeing this person beat me. I am seeing this person scream at me. And I am now mesmerized by this realization, this awareness, this action, that I've almost stopped reacting to him, which means I'm no longer screaming back. I'm no longer trying to defend myself. I'm just letting him do what he has to do. So I'm watching all of this with a dispassionate lens of a person who's watching a movie or a drama play out in real life, or a theater scene play out in real life. And the thought which was there in my head at that point in this disassociation was, I still had that strong sense of belonging with me, which means I knew that though I'm disassociated in that moment, I belong to me, which means my ego kicks in and says that I belong to Amitabh, right? And let's call the other person as Raj, just for sake of conversation. And I know Raj is a different person. And what struck me at that point was, how is Raj different? Like, what would it be for me to be transported into Raj's head? Like, how would I view the world, and how would I view this whole transaction of somebody beating up somebody if I could somehow get a ringside view into Raj's head? Now, while this concept sounds very simple, and this might to a lot of people appear to be the basics of empathy or the basics of relating in a transaction, it's actually a fairly complicated concept, right? Even today, for me. So, and this has happened to me now many times, and now I sometimes do it just because it's a thought experiment. So, at that point, which is the first time when it happened, this was fairly spontaneous, right? No trigger, don't know where this came from, don't know where that sudden sense of awareness. So, your awareness is very heightened. It's almost as if how people explain their experience on DMT, right? I've never done it. But when they say that we saw different dimensions, we saw a fourth dimension, a fifth dimension, very similar to me, right? Like, I'm now suddenly seeing a lot more variables in that transaction, which when my ego is active, it's very hard to see, right? And actually, my ego has not really shut off also in this example. What's really happened is this is like an out-of-body experience. So I am still me, but I'm able to see these two people fight it out. And at the same time, to add complexity to this experience, I also begin to examine what it would be to switch sides, to be in Raj's head. Right, and after that point, I have read about this in a lot of like, I have a deep interest in neuroscience, so I read a lot of neuroscience, I read a lot of Buddhism, and a lot of places this comes up, right? So how your ego creates this image of yourself in your head, and there are points where sometimes you can lose a grip of that. You as in, I don't know what, who you in this example is now, because now we are talking of ego, Amitabh, you. So, however you want to do this, but in simplicity, what you think of yourself as a conscious experience can lose grip of yourself at certain points. And as I said, now I can do it almost at will as a thought experiment. But the first time it occurred to me, it was a very disorienting and a very startling experience. Like, as I said, I remember stopping to react to the transaction itself. Like, I stopped defending, I stopped giving him back words. I was now mesmerized by what's happening. It's almost like I can imagine this to be almost like the Matrix kind of Matrix, the movie kind of scene, right? Where everything to Keanu Reeves seems to be happening in slow motion, right? He's able to see everything come into him as a set of extended data parameters, which is coming into his sensory apparatus, and he's able to process it in slow motion. Obviously, I'm dramatizing and I'm exaggerating, but the beauty of this man in your head, so I call this the man in your head problem, right? So, if you now begin to do this or experience this a few times, and I know I'm not doing a great job of explaining this rabbit hole, right? Because a lot of people are probably sitting and wondering or listening and wondering, saying, not different than empathy. Probably you're right, right? But think of the disassociation or the the elimination of yourself from that scenario, right? And you are still part of it, like an out-of-body experience. That's the closest I can describe this. So the more you begin to do this, you begin to realize that, or the more you have experienced this, what you begin to realize is that in those few moments, or when you are able to see yourself as somebody different, two different, I won't say insights, but conundrums pop in your head, right? The first conundrum which pops in your head is, so this person I'm looking at is me, but is not really me. I know I'm sounding like Nityanand, but that's a different, that's for a different day and a different conversation. So the person I'm looking at is me, but is not me, or it doesn't feel like me. And that's the first conundrum that hits you very hard. The second conundrum that hits you very hard is you begin to see facets of yourself which you haven't fully seen, right? So in that moment, and I must have been, as I said, 11, 12 or 13, for the first time I realized that I didn't have good words to put it then, but now with the hindsight of age, I can do this a bit. I realized that I was a loner. I postured a bit, which means I postured being happy and enjoying the social circumstance. And the third thing I realized was that I didn't really enjoy what I was doing, right? I didn't enjoy like whatever I was doing, right? Like the debate for a ball I didn't feel belonged there. I mean, I could clearly see that this is not what I'm enjoying, but I'm doing it because social protocol demands it, or because that's what we've been taught as kids to do. Now, as I've grown older and as I've matured is probably an exaggerated term, but as I've grown into an adult, I have begun to realize that these points of dissociation actually begin to show you the incongruity or the dissonance you have between what is the version of you and what is the real you. And the more I see of it, the more it confuses me. So I want to say that, look, this leads, gives me insight, this gives me clarity. But to me, it gives me neither, right? Actually, I mean, I would love to take a stand in, say, like a Sadhguru or a whoever else, right? I actually have a lot of respect for Osho, so I won't make fun of Osho. But yeah, the more I realize this, I want to say it like one few of these wise men. When I say vice, it's stop quote, start quote, right? Or start quote, stop quote, which means I'm being facetious here. I want to be able to say like the wise men that it's a moment of clarity, it's a moment of insight, it's a moment of great self-realization. But to me, it's neither, right? None of these. It's actually damn confusing. And it leaves me in a state which is... leaves me in a state which is fairly without a rudder or without a route. And I haven't really figured out why this happens. Why this sense of telescopic view of yourself happens. And now I, as I said, I really can do it at will, right? So I can be in the middle of a conversation and I can find myself zoning out, and I can see myself as an outsider, and I can examine myself. It shows me the ugly side of myself. I hopefully try and correct some of those. It also shows me how many facades and charades I play with, which means I'm sitting in a conversation where I want to tell you that you are an ugly bastard, but ugly as in not literally ugly, but I mean not figuratively ugly, not physically ugly. I want to tell somebody you're an ugly bastard, but instead what I'm sitting there and saying, oh, how great, how fantastic life is and blah, blah, blah. And I'm still putting my body into that transaction, right? Versus, there's a part of me in that moment of awareness which tells me that, look, you're so distanced from yourself, right? And that strong sense of being isolated, lonely, hits me very hard. We'll examine this again at some point. And when I speak about it again, I will definitely try and bring my deep need for silence, my deep need for space, and my deep need for being myself, though I think when I say being myself, being the real me, which I don't think I am. So, for example, everyone wants to be the real himself, right? Or at least they claim to be. But in my case, the conundrum is much worse, right? I don't know who the real me is. I don't know who the man in my head is. I don't fully understand that. In fact, I don't understand most parts of it, right? And the more I meditate or the more I become slightly aware, the more I become mindful or whatever that psycho bubble is, the more I begin to fall into this fairly disoriented, disturbed kind of state where I now see multiple versions of my own truth. And that is a very disorienting feeling. But as I said, we will revisit it. We'll definitely talk about it. And that's about it. It's a wrap. I do write in via amitabh.mwrh@gmail.com. So if you're listening to this and if you like it, do write in. I'll definitely try and respond. There are a few of us who are manning that box, but I will definitely try and respond. And I'll also, as I always keep saying, get better at becoming a little more active on Twitter. I'm fairly terrible at it. So do write in at amitabh.mwrh@gmail.com. It's a wrap. And wish all of you a lot of joy in your life. That's it. Thank you.